So we're going to start with the rapid fire rounds. The first one is, at what age do you want to retire?
5 years.
How long does it take you to get ready in the mornings?
1 hour.
How many hours of sleep can you survive on?
I sleep a lot and I like sleeping, so minimum 7.
Favorite color?
Blue.
What time of day are you most inspired?
Saturday.
Fill in the blank. An upcoming technology trend is blank.
Network as a service.
The city in which the best kiss of your life happened?
Paris.
Pick one, Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk?
None.
The biggest mistake of your career?
I once thought that someone telling me that something was not possible was true. And eventually I realized he was wrong.
How do you relax?
I meditate a lot.
How many cups of coffee do you drink per day?
I don't drink coffee.
A habit of yours that you hate?
I used to bite my nails for the last 30 years, basically since I was a kid. And for the last couple of months, I think I managed to go with it.
The most valuable skill you've learned in life?
Be transparent.
Your favorite Netflix show?
The Crown.
Top priority in your daily schedule?
Follow my morning routine.
Ideal vacation spot for relaxation?
Fuerteventura.
Key factor for maintaining a work-life balance?
Say no a lot.
Memorable career milestone?
I once became a lead engineer without having an engineering degree.
A recent business innovation that caught your attention?
I'm very intrigued by real telco marketplaces.
The last film that you saw that had a good impression on you?
I'm not much into cinema.
All right, well, that's the end of the rapid fire round. Now we can move on to the bigger questions, which you can answer with as much ease and time as you like.
Okay.
Right, now we have today with us Mr. Eduard Perez from Colt. And we're interviewing him here within the context of the Total Telecom convention here at the RAI. The natural question, of course, is what is Colt doing here? What's their connection to a telecom conference?
So basically, we like attending to events, but not from a just fun and partying point of view. But the reality is we believe that in this environment, it's much easier to find the right partners for further collaboration in the future, whether it's about innovation or sales or anything like that. Personally, my thing is by the time I'm able to connect with someone, I understand if there is a real chance that we work together, not because there is a business problem to solve, but because there is some sort of chemistry or alignment from a cultural point of view that would grant us to whatever it's decided in that meeting would have a real future.
Okay, I'm also interested in a deeper sense because researching your firm Colt, it's hard to grasp exactly what you do. It seems like maybe you're like an ISP, but on a worldwide scale, or please let me invite you, we need to establish this.
Okay, Colt is a telecommunication company. We are based in London. Well, our headquarters are in London, but we have a global presence. We're actually the biggest fiber provider for B2Bs in Europe at the moment after the Lumen acquisition. We have category of tier one AS. And mainly what we do is we enable connectivity for our customers whenever they need it. Our most important product in the portfolio is basically, well, we're one of the few telecommunication providers and one of the first that managed to digitize the entire customer journey. So with us, we are able to quote, order, activate, modify, manage your network in real time. It's like a cloud-like experience, but in telecommunications, which is absolutely unique because, as you may know, those processes take years to complete. In our case, it's real time and digital.
And I found the phrase, the Colt IQ network. Is that your brand for your services or just a part of them? Or?
Yes. In fact, the IQ network is what allows us to, well, use the network with a software component on top. So we're able to separate what is done physically or by human beings as compared to what can be done automatically by orchestrators.
This recalls to mind, is this the SDN, software-defined yes. network?
Yeah. There's a lot of discussion in the industry about what SDN is and what is not. There's a lot of use cases around data centers and so on. In our case, as I told you, we managed to digitize the end-to-end process. So for us, SDN is the key enabler that allows us to use our network flexibly and deliver it to our customers in real time, which is absolutely unique in the industry.
So global digital infrastructure. One could say.
Yes, the whole thing about global digital infrastructure is that it may have multiple meanings. For us, a global digital infrastructure is basically what allows customers to simplify their access to a digital world. And this could be from a connectivity point of view, from a security point of view, from a whatever. So one of the purposes that we have with our initiatives and our scope of connectivity is really understanding what enterprises from different verticals want from telecommunication providers and be able to deliver that, but in an easy manner, in a flexible manner, and in a way that addresses their needs in a much easier and faster way than what they are used to.
Okay, what they need from telecom providers. So you're clearly some sort of middleman or middle technology in between there.
No, we are a telecommunication company.
Oh, okay.
So we are the destination for the enterprise.
Oh, okay. So indeed, okay. So there's no question you belong at a telecom conference.
Yes.
Clearly quite a part that you provide voice service, but so much more, obviously, than that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in fact, well, voice is one of the components, but we have a significant presence in, well, the biggest fiber network in Europe for B2B.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I have a couple of network terms here. I also picked up NFV, network function virtualization, and then what might be a bigger concept, NAS, network as a service. Are those folded into the same concept, or are they separate things, or could you discuss each of them or both of them if they belong together?
Yeah, basically NAS or network as a service is basically the framework that allows us to deliver connectivity services to customers in a flexible way and ideally digitally. However, this kind of connectivity could be Ethernet access, an IP access, access to the cloud, or whatever. However, the NFB component basically what allows is it helps us virtualize specific network functions. So, for example, imagine that instead of having a physical router in your office, you have the same capability, but it's already in our edge. So you don't really have to worry about that. You just plug and play, and that port already has this service that you're looking for. For example, we could have a virtual CPE that contains a firewall, a router, an SD-WAN module, and all of that in a single box. But it's just a piece of software. It's like when you go to an Apple store and you download a specific application, it's that equivalent, but in telecommunications. That has a massive benefit from a ESG point of view, and that's one of the reasons why we do it, because it does not only simplify the end-to-end experience, but it's a way of delivering value to a customer in a way that doesn't affect not just the planet, but also the operational in the background.
And so this networking as a service, NAS, it really seems quite a breakthrough, really a new innovation or an innovation in the industry, which probably spearheaded your sales. Is that true?
We understand NAS as more than a specific technology or set of technologies, as a new way of doing business in telco. Obviously, there is a technical component, which is SDN and NFBs and so on. Well, software-defined network and network function virtualization. But ultimately, the business value behind is that we are able to deliver connectivity to our customers using a digital channel. But most importantly, they are able to consume this flexibly, real-time, whenever they need it. That's the real difference. And it's like a cloud-like experience, but in telco. If you take in consideration the background of our industry, for a enterprise to have access to connectivity to another site or to cloud or to whatever, it may take even months. So, and I'm not only talking about going to the place, putting the fiber and configuring the equipment and all of that, but the entire process. The amount of engagements that you have with sales, sending their requirements, someone going to the place and putting the fiber, configuring the device, managing the invoices and all of that. What we did is we automated the end-to-end journey. So for us, NaaS is not just one new trendy technology or movement. In my opinion, it's actually what it's going to save, at least the part of the industry where we are working on. Of course, we don't have to worry about 5G investments and 6G investment because we're not a mobile operator. But we do need to focus about finding differentiation in the industry. We're also worried about commoditization. We are looking for new ways to find profitability. And that's really where NaaS is a key enabler, because obviously it adds additional value to our customers, so it makes us more competitive. But at the same time, it significantly reduces the operational pressure to run the whole delivery framework in a telco provider.
What I just heard you say is it considerably lowers your costs and your efforts of providing services to customers.
Yes, it does. Taking consideration that some of those steps are actually automated. So it's not only faster from a customer point of view, but they are currently done by a machine. The important thing here is that the touch points where we want to enhance the experience with our customers, it remains manual. We're still in contact with our customers. Yes, we're still in contact with our customers, and it's fundamental that that relationship is built in not necessarily a face-to-face, but in a more human approach. Let's not confuse two things. Organizations across the board should focus on, obviously, improving their processes, automation, RPAs, and blah, 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 whatever. But at the end, it's not only about delivering a service, but delivering experience. And that's really where we want to play. Because now it doesn't really matter whether you call a call center and it takes you X amount of minutes to get your issue resolved. Because KPIs between carriers, it's pretty much the same. We're still winning that race from an NPS point of view and so on. But I don't think that that's the winning factor for a customer in these days. What do they want? They basically want more faster access to their connectivity, flexibility, because their demands are also changing flexibly, the same way that they are modifying their computing power. In real time, they want to do something similar with their network. They want broader access. And that's also one of the reasons why this Lumen acquisition is a massive movement for Colt, because now we have a global presence in Europe and a level of connection and closeness with our customers that we never thought.
I'm interested in exploring what I could imagine to be, you know, customer resistance to this new innovative product, either because they can't be made to understand it, how great it is, how they really should be enthusiastic about it, or just they're set in their ways. Surely there was some sort of element of resistance that you had to overcome, and how did you do that, or maybe there was none.
Let me put it this way. Every time that we or anyone innovates something, there is a period that you need to spend engaging with your customers basically to understand their needs. And eventually you're able to address those needs. And eventually this initial set of customers are like probably your first partners in crime until your product has some sort of evolution. We went very deep in our relationship with our customers for the initial phase because we wanted to understand really what were their concerns. And obviously it's complexity around processes, the time that it takes, and all of that. So that was completely clear. Now the phase two of that plan, or basically that product development, is more around education and communication and brand awareness and changing something that, in my opinion, is something very difficult to modify once expectation is set in the industry. Not every customer believes that this is possible, so we need to show them. And that's why we have intuitive online experiences, why we have webinars, why we have our salespeople trained to explain our customers how it works. This is literally where the magic happens. You're not necessarily, as a customer, when you're buying something, you know all of the capabilities. And especially when it's something this new, you need to dedicate a huge amount of time training your customers. It's not as immediate as a marketing.
Interesting, training your customers.
Yeah. Especially because the kind of customers that would be using Colt on Demand, as many other platforms, is basically someone who would be in direct contact with a new platform. So now the multiple decision makers within the enterprise now have access to a single platform where they can make their request, and they would be able to see it, control it, manage it, and so on. We're talking about people from procurement. We're talking about people from finance, people from IT, network managers, the actual developers. This service or this platform is also available via API, so our customers can also connect with us via APIs and request services and upgrades and modifications and all of that in real time. So it's a new set of customer personas that we need to address individually with a specific plan, with a specific communication and a specific message for each of them. It would be absolutely impossible for anyone introducing into this market to think that, oh, I have this capability, now my customers are going to know how it works, because we're literally transforming the way the industry is behaving.
Okay, very interesting. Training your customers. But if I may, most people would more readily think about training one's own employees. And indeed, you're the senior lead for strategy and innovation, presumably head of a very important department along those lines. You know, what are your measures to form and to maintain the sort of a company culture that you want to see there, a culture that fosters innovation and that is able indeed to spread the message that you just talked about in the right way to customers who need to be trained to appreciate what they can get from you?
We need to make, or probably break that problem into separate pieces, okay? One of them is we first need to focus into creating an organization more product-driven that follows product processes and product mindset across different parts of the business. By this, I mean having closer contact with our customers, really understanding what they need, what they want, assessing that market-wise, being able to understand what our competitors are doing and not necessarily replicate what they are doing, but finding and sending the message also to the teams that it's not only about replicating what the competition is doing, but finding our own space of competition. And this is really interesting in the digital space because more and more, especially in telecommunications, everybody's used to deliver the same Ethernet product, the same IP access. The level of differentiation is very little. However, in digital, we have this massive opportunity to literally deliver something new, different, and cost-effective. So that is one of the messages, people to understand that it's not only about replicating, and it's also about being much closer to the customer. The other point is about sustaining this in time. And I think that the whole component or the key component to make this happen, it's around people to have trust in the decisions that they make and giving them the space to fail without massive consequences for that. Ultimately, This doesn't happen like alone. Everybody's talking about, oh yeah, we want to create safer spaces for the team, but how? That's how the whole cultural discussions start. I mean, obviously we all want to have like a happy workplace and so on, but how? I don't think that there are like magic bullets for any of this. In our experience, and one of the things that happens in Colt more and more, and I think it's driving a massive change, there are two. One of them is direct and open communication from the different levels, top down, but also bottom up. And also, this is controversial for some, but it's like accepting our own vulnerability and that we all mess it up a lot. And when we have meetings, we are perfectly fine to say, look, this didn't go as expected, and it's fine. It's not a big deal to come back to a team meeting and say, look, it didn't go as we expected. We didn't take that requirement. It failed. That part just didn't work. The thing is, it's absolutely impossible to create an environment where people feel okay to work with you if they don't know how can they connect with you and how can you connect with them. So I don't know how to find the right words for this, but often it's more about removing all of the typical corporate rules we have learned until now and being able to just build your new rules, but not necessarily globally. Start with your own team. Try to create a movement where that happens and works. Let others see what are the benefits of doing it that way. The whole problem with cultural transformation is that it's often perceived as a mandate, and it's not. It's literally just the opposite. It's someone leading by example, and if you are lucky, like we are, to have a CEO with the power of communication and real conviction of what we are, what is the good thing to do, it's great. But you may even have a good culture, even if your leadership is not as good as you would like. And I don't know, my suggestion, and I say this to my partners, to my friends, to my team and so on, just do it locally. If it's good, some others will replicate it. So let's start with that.
So the last question for you is of a personal kind. What would you be doing in your life if not this?
I would be a surfer.
Hence Fort Ventura, your favorite place.
Yes.